Real World Entrepreneurship Podcast with Bhairav Patel and Alan Clark.
Welcome to the Real World Entrepreneurship Podcast, where we tackle the practical challenges that startup founders and small business owners face and give our own unvarnished opinions. My name is Bhairav Patel. I'm the Managing Director at Atom Ventures and Atom CTO, where we partner with small businesses and startup founders to help them define and build their tech vision.
And I'm Alan Clark. I'm the founder of the Business Growth Partnership, and we work with high-potential businesses to help them unblock the blockages that are preventing them from reaching their full potential. In this edition of the Real World Entrepreneurship Podcast, we're going to discuss testing your idea in the market. But before that, Bhairav, what have you been up to this week?
Well, you and I have been talking to our friends in America, haven't we? Which is very interesting. So I am now a mentor for the 1776 incubator based at, well, on the East Coast. And you and I gave our first workshop out there to a group of companies on a pre-accelerator about business model canvas, which I thought was
Yeah, absolutely. An interesting bunch. I think it really served to address that perception that all entrepreneurs are doing technology. None of them were doing technology. They all had good old traditional product businesses.
Yeah, and there were really interesting ones as well. So a lady who had tops, shirts and blouses that you could put on if you have some sort of disability or inability to kind of tie buttons, put buttons on. Do you tie a button? I don't know if you tie a button. No.
You button up a button.
Okay. Yeah. So then the lady making dog treats, which I think that's very interesting. And what I found really interesting about the dog treat lady was that she realized quickly that people want something very personal. And I think that's something that's interesting for the conversation we're going to have today about testing your idea in the market, because she obviously had a product that was out there. And then as she grew, she realized that there was a certain demographic within within her buyer set that were buying regularly, and they had an affiliation with her product. So then she could concentrate on them and help build the loyalty. So I think that was very interesting.
I think that leads us absolutely perfectly into point number one, and that is around defining your business's proposition. Because obviously, before you test your idea in the market, you need to have an idea. And the point of this stage in business development and growing your business is to make sure that the idea that you have actually resonates with potential customers. So stop number one, and this may sound self-evident, but it's about defining your proposition. What is it that your business will do for your target customer, and how will it do it? And what I would propose here, and obviously you can talk about number one, or the first point on there, one option is to go and make a minimum viable product of whatever it is you're going to offer the market that allows you to demo. But sometimes that can be pretty challenging. And another good tool there, if you can't make a demo product or service, is to actually create the piece of literature that you would use, the sales leaflet that describes the features and benefits that a prospective customer might see, to help them decide whether they're actually interested in this or not.
So I 100% agree. I find that, so we as part of Atom CTO and Atom Ventures we're launching this new thing called Rebuild MVPs, which is for us to help businesses build their vision. And I think one of the key things that we find when companies come to us with a minimal viable product, like a product that they want to build, and then looking at minimal viable product, is that it's not a minimal viable product. Everyone seems to come to us with this huge, massive idea, which needs to have all the bells and whistles you can imagine running out of it. And we always try and whittle that down, because, you know, within all of these kind of major features that you've got, it's only really ever one or two features that people really will buy into initially, and everything else then is becoming value added. And I think this is where most startup founders, not necessarily fail, but get it wrong. they're not really thinking about the core proposition of what it is that, what is their core value proposition? What are they really trying to bring to the market? And I think this is hard, very, very hard.
You are pressing all my buttons on this, and this is at the heart of all the work that I do, which is around, if you're not actually doing something for your customers, why on earth would they be interested in what you're doing? And if you can't distill all that you think you can do into one overwhelmingly compelling reason why they should be interested in your product or service, you've not thought about it clearly enough. And that's why that second point, if it's not something that you can deliver as a demo, if you can write the leaflet and create the leaflet that sells it, because what will not sell is 25 pages of and. Because a prospective customer will say, I don't understand, I've lost interest. Tell me in one sentence what it is you can actually do for me.
Yes, and I think what's really interesting here is that there's, I think, even a step before this, before even the sales leaflet, right? It's okay, so you need to have a definition of what you want to do, but it's almost like you need to go out to the market and just talk to people very, very, very early on. I know that's something that we're going to come to a little bit later, but even just talking to people in your own network to say, this is what I'm thinking about doing. What would be your, it's interviewing people. What would be your opinion on it? And then coming that back up, which you can then take back out to market.
Well, I guess that's really where I was coming to when I was thinking about the subject matter was, we're kind of at that point where it is only an idea at this point. It is not a real live product. You're not trying to sell. Because there's nothing to buy right now.
Yeah.
It is testing out. And the second element of that, once you have an understanding of what it is you think you can do, then get super, super tied into exactly who you think are the target customers that will actually want to buy this product. And if you look online, there is rafts of support available to help you create a persona. And that is effectively taking a broad group of customers and actually capturing them as though they were one single individual. And that then allows you then to buy, give them a name, tell me how old they are, where they live, what they do for a job, what they're currently doing to address this particular need, what the other options are. And it makes it really, really tangible rather than dealing in generalities, because most ideas don't address a generality. They address a specific. And if you have a very clear idea of specifically who your best prospect or his prospect target customer is, and then you can actually work off their requirements.
And so there's a couple of things that I've faced from past experience. Avrium is a good example, right? Is that your target customer might not be the end user.
Absolutely.
So one of the things you need to really sit down and think about is actually your target customer may not be the person who's actually going to use it on a day-to-day basis. It may be someone else in the middle who will be recommending your product to that person. And that's the whole thing when we did that talk this week about the business model canvas. It's your channels and your channel partners. And I think I remember when we did the Avrium persona workshop, what we realized there was that, you know, when you think about who needs to understand cash flow, you think, well, everybody. But actually, as you drill down into what it is, the problems that you're solving, then actually there's a much smaller subset of people that will require the knowledge that we could give them and who will action that knowledge and find it valuable. And that is a much smaller percentage than every single business in the country. And again, one of the things going back to point one is that when you're looking at building this out, yes, having a sales leaflet, thinking about what you want to actually build a minimal viable product, but actually writing down how you would approach and how they would use and what the operational aspect of it all is very important when you're looking at dealing with your target customer. How would, if you can't write it down on a piece of paper, I always think you can't build it. So there's no, if you can't describe it on a piece of paper and actually do it in a manual way, then you can't actually build it from in an automated way, right?
Absolutely. And once you have a clear understanding of exactly what it is you're offering into the market and who your customer is, your best audience prospect customer is likely to be, the next step is go out and identify 6 real life human beings who fit that profile. Because if you can't actually find them, you'll never be able to sell to them.
Yeah. It sounds really self-evident, but a lot of people don't, you know, I was having a conversation yesterday with some guys who were creating a product, and I said, well, okay, who is it for? Like, who is it really for? And they said, well, the market is big. And I said, well, the market might be big, but your specific product, no one might be interested in it, simply because there are plenty of other products out there in the market. So what is it that you're doing differently, and why are people going to pay extra for that difference? And so you need to go and find those people and talk to them. I think this is one of the key things. Everyone suddenly just assumes that everyone wants my idea.
And this is the first really, really key point where it moves out with your domain and actually you move into the market. And so often I've seen businesses who are more than happy to spend days and months on points number 1, 2, and 3, but are absolutely terrified of number 4, which is actually going out there and trying to secure appointments or meetings where they can go and share their idea with people who might actually buy it. Because none of us really want rejection. We want to be loved, and the fact that you go out there and ask, you're likely, particularly if it is something new and different, there's going to be an awful lot of people that say, it's new, I don't really understand, it's risky. It reminds me of the nobody ever get fired for buying IBM. We do it the way we do it now, and it works. Why would I risk doing something new, buying a new product or service that might not work and I'd be worse off than I am now?
Yeah, and having worked for IBM, I can definitely say some people should be fired for hiring IBM. But I think the thing there is that, you know, people say it's a security blanket. If I buy this, then I know that I'm buying quality, but are you really? And I think that's the... Well, yeah.
And never mind this, and my God, I'm buying this and I know it works. And, you know, at one level, if people didn't take a chance, nothing would ever move on. But equally, who needs a better mousetrap?
Yeah.
The same mousetrap we've had for 200 years arguably worked just as well now as they ever had. And I'll tell you, in the meantime, thousands of people have invented a better mousetrap, or what they thought was a better mousetrap, but they couldn't secure the market. And that's why we're looking at this subject matter right now. You don't have a business until there's a proven demand in the market for it. And that's why you're testing your idea is so important.
And I think this is where a lot of founders fail on this step, is because they fear rejection. They fear that their idea is worthless, right? And I've seen so many people pursuing ideas that are quite frankly rubbish, because they just don't want to give up on their idea. And what they're not doing is they're not seeing how their idea can be adapted to the market, because they are just too tied to a single thing. And I think starting a business is hard, as we keep saying, but it's also a lot of resources and time and money you put into it. So why waste it?
The first point is, at some point you're going to have to stand in front of a customer and pitch. Go in and sell your idea. And I've talked about this in earlier podcasts, but one of the great things when we were doing Team Lot was we had one guy in the team who had spent his entire life in sales. And he loved nothing more than an audience that he could pitch to. Frankly, for me, it terrified the living daylights out of me. So I didn't do it. But part of my founding team was one guy who loved this And you know what the great news was? He was brilliant at it. He literally had people in the palm of his hand. I'd give him 15 minutes and he would do the full tail fix with charisma and engagement. And that may sound a little bit intimidating, but you know, the reality is we can all get better at it. We may never be a natural, but if your role in the business is around leadership and you don't have one member of the team who is a natural salesman or a fixer, you're going to have to learn that skill. And a lot of it can be learned.
Yes. I mean, for those who of you listening in Scotland and you've heard of the EIE, I did that spotlight pitch a couple of years back, which is, you know, that's quite scary. You know, you've got a dark, it's darkness, then spotlight comes onto you, I think 30 seconds or 60, I can't remember how many. It was seconds, and then it goes straight off. So if you haven't given your pitch in that point in time, you get cut off. And what I found very interesting with that process was actually I wasn't meant to give it that pitch. It was one of my colleagues who was meant to do it, but she, you know, to be fair, was realized halfway through the process that it wasn't something that she was able to do. But as I kind of came in late to that, and I saw some of the pitches that were being presented from, I think it was within like, I think it was 2 weeks to the big day. The way that people on day one, when they were trying to pitch and they got up on stage and couldn't even speak, they were unable just to put out five words. By the end of it, everyone nailed it. And I was so impressed with how people had just had pulled it in. And all of these guys that when you talk to them was just scared shitless, really, of getting up the stage and talking in front of thousands of people. But they did it, and they did it really, really well. And it's about practice. It's about getting the help that you need in order to convey your message, and then really knowing what you're trying to say. And the great thing about the pitching piece is that it makes you really sit hard and think about what you're trying to deliver to a person. So what you're trying to deliver, what benefits there and why they should be buying it from you, right? And to do that in 60 seconds or 30 seconds, like 60 seconds, I think it was, is very difficult. But once you've been through that process, you know it, right? You know it inside out, and then everyone else will know it within 60 seconds. You don't have to spend 10 minutes.
That's so important. And that for me is why the next bit is so critical on this. Because once you have defined your pitch, and as Barab said, sometimes you might only have 60 seconds, and we've all heard of what is your elevator pitch. And you need to have one, because you may only get 15 seconds to grab the attention, or you might have an hour, at which point you can obviously go into a much deeper story. But there is nothing worse than the person that pitches, ends a pitch, and then as soon as the conversation starts, afterwards, starts giving, oh, but I shouldn't have said that, oh, and I meant that, and I should have said that, and I should have said that, because you've not got your pitch right. Once your pitch is over, listen really, really carefully. And I think this is where I was particularly helpful in our team, because I'd been used to pitching work in my time in advertising, and the key thing then was to shut up and really listen to what the client is going to say. Because it's then, only after that, that you can then refine your pitch the next time, or identify what the key issues are, and then feedback on them. So, once your pitch is done, listen really, really carefully. And make sure you hear both the good things, because we're all looking for validation. Everybody is looking for validation. But also listen really, really carefully to every negative, because these are the reasons they won't buy. It's not all the things they like that are reasons they won't buy. The reason they won't buy your product or service is because of the negative stuff. It's also worth at this point to ask, what else is in the market that is similar to what we are doing, or how do you address the problem, need or want that we have, that we are aiming to address for you?
Yes, and I think the only thing I'd like to add here is that make sure you talk to a wide enough range of people and don't just hear what you want to hear.
Well, that's it. Listen to the good and the bad. I know I said earlier on, this is not about achieving sales. But it is actually important that we're getting a really good understanding of, is this validated or not? And I remember my work with the High Growth Ventures Unit at Scottish Enterprise, where we had a team of 10 who worked with early stage businesses. And one of the key issues on that was, have they validated their idea on the businesses that we're working with, or have they, and have they validated the market? And it was my colleague on there, a brilliant guy called Alistair McNaughton, who always had brilliant, pithy insight to share. And one of the subject matter was, how do you validate an idea? How do you know you've actually validated the idea and validated the market? And it was him who absolutely nailed it. He said, well, because you've got a bag full of purchase orders. Up until that point, you haven't really validated very much at all. It's human nature, particularly if you are a young and immature business, somebody that's trying to do something, people don't want to bust your balloon and kill your dreams. And they will typically try and be positive. But if you ask them, can I have a purchase order to buy this? And they give you it, I would listen to every word they've said. If not, I would treat it all with a sense of challenge, let's say. Did they really, really mean what they said? And was I really, really listening, as in point number 6, to the bad as well as the good?
Yeah, definitely. And I think the purchase order is an interesting one because it'll help you understand your pricing, right? And how do people buy? And what is the kind of, well, one of the big things obviously with any kind of idea is understanding what is the lead or the sales process, sales length for your product. So you know, if you go up to someone and ask them, okay, if you're going to, can you give me a purchase order for the product? You'll know quite quickly what their hesitations are, and you'll be able to then build a strategy to get around those.
Absolutely. At this point, back to base, you've been out, you've spoken to some real live customers who might actually buy your product, you've shared your best expression of your product with them, you've made your pitch, you've listened carefully. Now, back to base and have a good, hard look at everything you've learned so far. There's a very few, if any, businesses where the first iteration of the idea is the one that succeeds in the market.
Which leads us on to the next couple of points, actually. So once you've figured out how your product is perceived in the market, how people will actually buy it, what kind of pricing level and how you need to pitch it, what your real key benefits are, which probably are different from the ones that you thought they were, then go back out to market, refine what you've done, and test it all again. And make sure that you keep doing this until the number of people looking to purchase increases, right? And it doesn't have to be exponential. Then we're not talking suddenly.
No.
But it needs to be, yes, you need to go from hesitation to immediate, yes, I really like this.
And leaving with a purchase order. Whether that is a literal purchase order, of course, I don't mean that. But it would be a, if you build that, I will buy that. I absolutely would buy that. Because I understand that that is better for me or my business than what I'm using right now.
And that's, I don't know, some of the listeners out there may be familiar with letters of intent. That is definitely something that you should be looking to get. They do sometimes help in investment conversations, a lot of times not, but at least then you've got the ability to say, I have these people who are willing to buy if I build X, Y, and Z thing. And make it very clear, right? And ensure that the person who's giving you that letter of intent is able to make that decision, is that decision maker within the organization, right? Not just someone who says, oh, that looks nice, I'll give you a letter of intent, but then I will need to go to someone else in order to get that validated and all
sorts. Absolutely. A letter of intent from the CEO of a FTSE 100 company is eminently more valuable than a letter of intent from the procurement assistant.
Yes.
So just to review what we're chatting about today, when it comes to testing your idea in the market, have a really clear definition of your proposition, create a persona for your hottest prospect, then go out and identify 6 real customers that fit that profile, get on the phone or whatever means of comms you want to use, and secure a meeting. Pitch your idea, then listen really carefully to all the feedback, the good and the bad. And you'll know that you validated your offer when you've got purchase orders, firm intentions to buy. But more realistically, the first couple of times you do this at least, you're going to go back to the ranch, review all the feedback you've had, develop your thinking, and go back out and test it all over again. Thanks for joining us on today's episode of the Real World Entrepreneurship Podcast. Look forward to seeing you next time.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Many thanks for taking the time to listen to the podcast today. If you like what you hear, please leave a review or subscribe. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, all the main podcasting sites. And if you'd like to learn more from us, you can contact Alan. He's alan@tbgp.co.uk. And you can find me at info@atomcto.com.